Welcome to episode 78 of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast for the week of September 3rd, 2007. My name is David, and I haven't forgotten, I'm still a Fred. On this week's episode of the Fredcast, as you know, I have a lot to catch up on. So we've got racing news, we've got product news, news from Eurobike, product recalls, and much more. In the features today, we'll talk a little bit about a future presidential candidate, talk about what's coming up at Interbike, get your ideas about online route planners, and there's also a product review. Plus, as always, PodSafe cycling music. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. This week's episode of the Fredcast is sponsored, as it has been for many months now, appreciatively by Cambria Bicycle Outfitters. Cambria Bicycle Outfitters can be easily reached through the Fredcast website at www.thefredcast.com, and doing so will give you special offers open only to Fredcast listeners. Cambria Bicycle Outfitters, they outfit the world. Well, welcome back to the Fredcast. Or I suppose you're probably saying, what the heck is going on with David? So let's do a little bit of a recap. I've got a couple of announcements that I want to get to, and then we will get right into the news. So it's been what now? About a month since I've done a Fredcast. My apologies. If you've been following my Twitter, you know that there have been a lot of things going on in my life. And you also know that I recently moved. And along with that move came a new career, a new house to move into, a lot of unexpected travel in the last month, some of which took me out of the country, which was great because I got a chance to have a wonderful afternoon with my fellow spokesman. And if you don't know what that is, we'll talk about that in a second. My fellow spokesman, Carlton Reed from bikebiz.com and quickrelease.tv. But between moving, new job, new house, travel that I didn't expect, and then, of course, it always happens when you're really busy, I got a really bad case of the flu, and I was down for more than a week. So with all of that happening, the Fredcast unfortunately fell by the wayside. My apologies to you, but I need to be healthy because Interbike is coming up, so we'll talk about that a little bit more. So thanks for sticking with us. I did not pod fade. I will not pod fade. We will be back next week with another episode of the Fredcast. Don't worry. I'm not going anywhere. I'm here to stay. And if I do go, which isn't going to happen, I wouldn't go without saying goodbye, so don't let that worry you too much. Anyway, we're back. Let's talk a little bit about a couple of announcements. First of all, you may recall on the last show I mentioned the fact that we were having some issues with the Fredcast forums. If you're not familiar with the Fredcast forums, you can find those by going to the Fredcast website at www.thefredcast.com. And way up there at the top of the page, you'll find a couple of tabs, and one of them says forums, and it's a great place to exchange ideas and information with other Freds just like you and me, people who love cycling. And if you're having an issue with your bike, or you've got a question, just looking for a place to go riding, or you want to talk cycling and it's the middle of the night and you can't go out on a ride, the Fredcast forums is a great place to do that. Now, up until recently, it wasn't exactly very friendly because we were having an issue with forum spammers, and they were sending all sorts of offensive junk to the Fredcast forums. Thanks to listener Tim from buffalobicycling.com, and I've put a link in the show notes to his website. Thanks to listener Tim, I believe we've gotten all those problems worked out, and it should be a safe place to go to again. So go ahead, go back, give it a try. If you have any issues, don't hesitate to let me know right away, and I'll give you all the contact information for me at the end of the show, because I've also added some ways to contact me that you might like. Next up, I told you in the last show we were getting close to getting sold out on the Fredcast socks, and we are now sold out. You'll still see a link on the webpage, but it'll tell you that it's sold out and there is no buy now button. And the reason for that is I'm working with Sock Guy. I spoke with them in the last couple of days, and we are now designing a second edition Fredcast sock. We sold out of the first edition. If you didn't get those, they were limited edition. The second edition will be limited edition as well. It will be a new design and a new style. I'll tell you all about it as soon as it's finalized. But because Interbike is coming up, the sock guy is slammed with orders, so I don't expect that I will have the new socks for about a month, but I'll be sure to let you know. Finally, the other thing I wanted to mention, and something I teased a few moments ago, we have a new episode of the Spokesman Cycling Roundtable podcast available. Now, if you haven't listened to the Spokesman, or if it's been a while, just let me remind you and tell you a little bit what the Spokesman is all about. The Spokesman is a collection of bloggers and podcasters and others in the cycling world. We get together about every 2 weeks or so. We're not incredibly regular with it, but we do try to come out about every 2 weeks. We sit around via the computer and we talk to each other about a variety of topics that are going on in the world of cycling, whether it's in product news or racing news, or for instance, this month we talked about the fact that there's some movements going on in various locations, including where I live now here in Park City, Utah, where there are a variety of politicians who are floating the idea of taxing cyclists for using the roads. Now, I think most of you out there probably think that's a bad idea like I do, but if you want to hear our perspectives on it, we had a great conversation. It was myself, Carlton Reed from Bike Biz Magazine and QuickRelease.tv, and we also had Rich Kelly, who's from the company that organizes Interbike, our industry trade show. So we talked a lot about Interbike, and if you're curious about Interbike and a little bit about the inner workings, you might want to go ahead and listen to that podcast. You can find it at www.the-spokesmen.com. Don't forget that hyphen, because if you don't put it in, as Carlton says, you're going to get a bunch of middle-aged bald guys who like to sing. That's not us. That's the Spokesman Singing Group. So it's www.the-spokesmen.com. So there's our announcements. We're done with those. Let's get finally into the news in the world of cycling. Now, if you consider what we've talked about here on the Fredcast in the past, you probably think that the very first stories I'm going to talk about today are all about professional cycling and, yes, about doping. Nope, I'm not going to do it, because for me, I'm a Fred, and a lot of you are Freds too, and being a Fred means that you love gadgets. When the new product announcements are made around this time of the year, we get pretty excited, and the one that I got the most excited about was the one about the brand new Garmin Edge. Now, I talk about Garmin so much here on the Fredcast, you probably think I'm sponsored by them. I'm not. I just think that they make great products. Now, for a long time, I've been telling you about the Garmin Edge 305 and 205 units because, quite frankly, it was the best thing out there if you wanted to get a cycle computer coupled with GPS, cadence, and heart rate. But I've told you time and time again that what would really ring my bell, what would really get me going, what I would want to get on my handlebars right away would be a convergence device, one that also included power. Garmin has finally announced just such a unit. It's the Garmin Edge 705. Not only is it a GPS, not only does it have the usual cadence and heart rate and all the other cycle computer functions that we've been looking for, but it includes two more things that I think you're going to like quite a bit. First of all, it's got a color screen. The color screen shows not just a line of where you've been, like the 305 and 205, it also shows a color map, including street level detail of the area in which you're riding. And they do this through the use of mini SD cards. So just like the card that you might put into your small compact digital camera or PDA, you can get a mini SD card loaded with the area in which you're riding. So it could be North America or it could be Europe. You put that in there and you can see the road right on your device. So that means that now you can see where you're going, see where you've been on street level maps, but it will also give you directions telling you where to make turns and which intersections at which you should be making those turns. So now you've got street navigation just like you would have in your car right there on your handlebars. But what has a lot of cyclists, including me, very excited is the fact that it now couples up with a power meter. The power meters come from SRM. They are one of the world-renowned power meter manufacturers for cycling. However, I will give you a couple of caveats when it comes to this new device. Number one, battery life may or may not be an issue, and I haven't seen a comment from Garmin on that. I'm waiting to get my evaluation unit so that I can test it and let you know what the battery life is. Because with the color screen, I can already tell you that the monochrome screen on the Edge 305, I only get about 5 or 6 hours of battery life out of it before I have to charge it. With a color screen, I worry that that may use more battery. The second issue is that you have to buy the SRM power meter separately. Now, that may be an issue because from the SRM power meters that I've seen so far, they can get quite expensive. And I've already gotten some emails from some of you who saw my initial announcement about this on thefredcast.com who said that you were concerned about just those two items, the cost of the power meter and the battery life. So as soon as I can get my hands on this and test it, I will get that test and review out to you here on the Fredcast. In the meantime, keep watching the website. I've been trying to post more and more onto the website, especially as I haven't been able to do podcasts over the last couple of weeks. So I've been trying to use the website more as a cycling blog. So feel free to check that out from time to time or add it to your RSS newsreader so that you'll know when I've posted something new to thefredcast.com. So first news item I had to bring you, the brand new Garmin Edge units. And while we're on the subject of new products, our friends over at bikebiz.com report on the new Shimano DuraAce carbon cranks. These are the brand new FC7800C. They're similar to the aluminum FC7800, but the weight of the crankset, including the bottom bracket, is 709 grams. Still, they're 10% stiffer than the aluminum FC7800. According to BikeBiz, the FC7800C has been developed with Shimano's Holotech 2 integrated bottom bracket using identical bottom bracket bearings, the same cups as the FC7800. The cranks are going to be available in 53/39 tooth combinations, as well as in 52/39 tooth combinations in lengths of 170, 172.5, and 175 millimeters. And hopefully I will get a good look at those and also some pictures when I go to Interbike later this month. Well, next up, I've got a couple of stories that really point out some of the dangers that we face out there on the roads from drivers, as well as some of the dangers that others can sometimes face from our fellow cyclists. The first story, very tragic story, and something that for those of us who are roadies, we see all too soon. And this was a story of somebody who was in a car and failed to yield. This happened last week in Miami, Florida, when a regular group ride was coming down the street. And according to the news article that I read, they were riding, quote, at least 30 miles per hour, and they were unable to stop in time as a car pulled out of a driveway in front of them. And essentially, it was a domino effect. There were about 40 riders in the group, possibly more. 11 of them were seriously injured, two of them having to be flown to a nearby hospital. And this just points out the problem that we do have, where sometimes, I mean, even when we're in a group of 40 cyclists, we can still be invisible to drivers. So it just points out the fact that we must be vigilant and we have to be careful to watch. I mean, it's almost like sometimes we have to have eyes in the back of our heads. So one of the things, though, that I'm noticing from all of the articles, and I tried to find as many articles as I could on this story. What I couldn't find was what was the speed limit on the street on which this group was riding. I'm not saying that it was their fault by any stretch of the imagination. I just think that as cyclists, we also need to pay attention to what the speed limit is. In this case, I don't think it matters. Even if the speed limit on this street was 25 miles an hour and these cyclists were going 25 or less, this accident still would have happened. I'd be interested to know, however, what the speed limit was and whether or not things like this have happened in this area before, whether or not there are bike lanes in this area. But keep in mind, when you are out there riding with your friends, in a group, or even especially when you're out there riding on your own, you've got to be extra vigilant. And of course, our thoughts and prayers go out to those cyclists who were injured, those 11 riders who were injured in this, what sounds like horrific accident. Meanwhile, in Irvine, California, there's a multi-use path that runs just behind UC Irvine, the university there, and a woman was walking on that path last Sunday at about 8:30 in the morning when she was struck by a cyclist on the trail. She fell, she hit her head, and she died. 68-year-old woman was involved in this, according to Irvine Police Lieutenant Rick Hanfield. He said that the woman was walking south on the trail and she waited for a group of cyclists who were traveling north to pass her. She turned east to cross the trail and then was hit by the cyclist who was riding with a friend traveling south. The accident caused her to fall, hit the back of her head, and she was transported to a medical center where she later died. According to, then by the way, this is something that bugs me from this article. According to the article, the cyclist was riding, quote, a several thousand dollar giant TCR road bicycle. I don't know why they felt the need to indicate the price of the bike. I think it's relatively irrelevant. What is relevant is that the cyclist was riding about 10 to 14 miles an hour, which quite honestly, in my opinion, is a relatively safe speed for a multi-use path, depending, of course, on how busy that path is. Now, I don't know the specific area where this occurred. I've certainly ridden on the multi-use paths down in Irvine and on the amazing bike lanes that are on the streets down in Orange County, California, but I don't know this particular stretch of trail. The cyclist was not arrested or cited, and there are no speed limits on the trail. It's county-owned, it's city-maintained, and it is not striped, nor are there signs indicating who has the right of way. Of course, obviously, if you're a cyclist, the pedestrian would have the right of way. I mean, you've seen those signs plenty of times. The pedestrians have the right of way. The equestrians have the right of way. A cyclist, unfortunately, do not. According to the police lieutenant, the cyclist is, quote, very upset and continues to be just devastated by the tragedy. I have no doubt about that. And of course, our thoughts and prayers go out to the cyclist, but perhaps more importantly, to the family of the woman who was killed. It's a freak accident. But it gives us the opportunity to talk a little bit about multi-use paths and also about our responsibilities as cycling citizens and as ambassadors of cycling. Now, I know that when I say that, some of you, the hair on the back of your neck stands up because I get the emails from you, but hear me out here. You know, from riding on the roads, from riding on the trails, you know that there are people out there that Rich Kelly from Interbike on the Spokesman podcast earlier this week called haters. There are just people out there who do not like cyclists, and they will look for any opportunity to get us off the roads, get us off the trails. Remember, something we talked about on the Spokesman this week was the possibility of taxing cyclists for using the roads. Knowing that there's haters out there, it is incumbent upon all of us to be good cycling citizens. And one of the ways that we do that is when we're using a multi-use path, we have to be cautious and careful for kids and dogs and joggers and strollers. Something that we talked about recently when we had the voicemail from Kristen from the Manic Mommies podcast. And she mentioned about this, and I totally agreed with what she had to say, as did many of you, judging by the emails and voicemails that I received. We had a situation here in my town recently where a mountain biker came off a trail. The trail emptied out onto a residential street. The mountain biker, two of them actually, one came down the street, saw a woman walking a little puppy, and said, hey, just so you know, there's another cyclist behind me. That second cyclist came down, I'm not kidding here, hit the puppy, almost killed the puppy. And when the woman walking the dog, you know, the nerve, she actually said something to the cyclist. The cyclist turned around, screamed something very offensive at her as if she shouldn't have been walking there, and continued to ride. Thankfully, the puppy's going to be okay. But, you know, take those two people as an example. The first one, I think, was an excellent cycling citizen. He came by and said, hey, just to warn you, there's another cyclist behind me. The second cyclist came by, and what he did was absolutely reprehensible and indefensible. All I can say is, besides enjoying the ride, besides being careful out there, let's try to be good cycling citizens. Well, let's take the next couple of minutes and turn to racing news. Some of it recent, some of it not so recent, but all of it important. And perhaps one of the ones that I think a lot of you are most interested in was Saul Raisin's return to professional racing. And this was on September 1st, just a couple of days ago, at the U.S. Pro Cycling Championships. And Saul raced along with his future brother-in-law, Dave Zabriskie, in the time trial at the U.S. Pro Cycling Championships. The winner this year, for the second year in a row and the third time in his career, Dave Zabriskie from Salt Lake City. And he did it in 39 minutes and 34 seconds with a blistering pace and an average speed of about 28.4 miles per hour over the 30-kilometer course. Coming in second, Danny Pate from Colorado Springs, just 1 second behind Dave Zabriskie. Third place went to Boulder, Colorado's Tim Duggan, 8 seconds behind. Fourth, Tom Zirbel from Boulder, Colorado, 15 seconds back. And in fifth place, from Team CSC, although he's racing for Team USA this time, Bobby Julek from Glenwood Springs, Colorado. Now, as for Saul Raisin, Saul did come in last place in this race, but it was a triumphant return to racing for Saul. He said, quote, "After my accident, my first goal and the goal for my team and family and all my loved ones was just to live a normal life again. And you know, I have that. And after that, my goal was to get back to racing. Today was my first race, and all the emotions I had, I can't describe them. About halfway through the race, it kind of hit me. It's like, oh my gosh, I'm racing. It was amazing. My next goal is in 2008 to start a full racing season." So our congratulations to Saul. It was great to see him last month and to interview him here in Salt Lake City. And it's great to see that he's back to professional racing. That is absolutely incredible. Now, before we get to the road race portion of the U.S. Pro Championships, just one more Dave Zabriskie-related story to relate to you. Dave's gotten himself involved in a charity here in the Utah area called Bikes for Kids Utah. And on Saturday, October 6th, Bikes for Kids Utah is going to be providing new bicycles, helmets, t-shirts, and bike locks to 1,000 pre-qualified underprivileged second graders from the Boys and Girls Club in Salt Lake, Weber, Davis, Murray, and Utah counties, which is absolutely awesome. Now, in order to make all of this happen, Bikes for Kids is having several fundraisers. First, a $25 donation will enter cyclists into a lottery to ride in a USA Cycling-sanctioned individual time trial, where their handicapped time will be compared against Dave Zabriskie's time up the Salt Lake Valley's famed Traverse Ridge. A lottery will determine the 200 participants, and prizes will be awarded for the top three in 11 age categories for both men and women. Now, if you're curious about this time trial, it's a 3-mile time trial with an elevation gain of more than 1,300 feet with 10 to 12% grades in some locations. And that's going to take place on Friday, October 5th at 10 a.m. Now, by the way, if you're curious about this and any of this that I'm talking about, I do have links in the show notes. And you can find the show notes for this show and every show at www.thefredcast.com. Click the show notes link at the top of the page. This is show number 78. Now, in addition to the time trial challenge, there's also a pre-ride dinner and auction being held Friday, October 5th at the Hidden Valley Country Club in Sandy, Utah. Again, you can find information on that in the show notes. There will also be rides on Saturday, a 50K ride, a family 5K, a half century, and a metric century ride. So once again, check all of that out in the show notes. If you are in this area or you'd like to participate, go ahead and click the link. It's www.bikesforkidsutah.com. Now, let's get back to the U.S. Pro Cycling Championships and let's talk about this year's Road Race Championship. Now, the U.S. Pro Cycling Road Championship was held on September the 2nd, and this year it was won by somebody who is having, I mean, a career year this year in cycling, Levi Leipheimer from Santa Rosa, California. He won in 4 hours, 22 minutes, and 19 seconds, holding off his teammate, George Hincappy from Greenville, South Carolina, who was 1 minute and 11 seconds behind. Just behind him, Neil Shirley from La Mesa, California, 1 minute and 14 seconds back. Then Freddie Rodriguez from Emeryville, California, 1 minute and 18 seconds back. And rounding out the top five, Danny Pate from Colorado Springs, Colorado, 1 minute 29 seconds back. Leipheimer has had an awesome year this year, including, of course, his win at the 2007 Amgen Tour of California and his third place finish at this year's Tour de France. Said Levi at the end of the race, quote, "2007 has been a dream come true for me. The Tour of California, I dreamed about that all winter and trained harder than I ever have before. Then to go to Europe, stand on the podium in Paris and win a stage of the Tour de France, and then to come here to Greenville and be the U.S. champion, it was much more than I ever dreamed of. Now, with Levi's victory here at the U.S. Pro Cycling Championships, this all but assures him the overall 2007 USA Cycling Pro Tour title. There are only two events remaining, the Tour of Missouri, September 11th through the 16th, and the Tour of Leelanau in Traverse City, Michigan on July the 16th. Well, that's the race scene here in the United States. What's going on with the UCI Pro Tour? There's a couple of races that we've missed over the last few weeks while I have been unable to do a Fredcast. So we're going to briefly recap each of those races. Now, the first was the San Sebastian Classic on August the 4th. That single day event was won by Leonardo Bertagnoli of Italy, who won it just barely edging out Juan Manuel Garate of Spain in the final sprint. The 140-mile race was won in 5 hours, 12 minutes, and 42 seconds. Third place went to pre-race favorite Alejandro Valverde, who was 18 seconds behind Bertagnoli, and there were four other riders who had the same time. Now, next up was the Tour of Germany, or the Deutschland Tour. That was August the 10th through the 18th, and this year, just like Dave Zabriskie winning the second time in a row for the U.S. Pro Cycling Championships, Jens Voigt from Team CSC took his second Tour of Germany title in as many years, winning in 30 hours, 57 minutes, and 21 seconds. And guess who was in second place? Having that career year I talked about a few moments ago, Levi Leipheimer from Team Discovery, 1 minute, 57 seconds back. And in third, David Lopez Garcia from Casa de Parña, 2 minutes, 10 seconds back. Now, rounding out the top five, Leonardo Bertagnoli from Team Liquigas at 3 minutes and 5 seconds. And in fifth place, Robert Gesink from Team Rabobank at 3 minutes and 15 seconds. Following the Tour of Germany was the one-day Vattenfall Sci Classics, and that was on August the 19th. This year's winner was Alessandro Bayon from Team Lamprey in 5 hours, 21 minutes, and 5 seconds. This is Bayon's second Pro Tour victory of the year, having won the Tour of Flanders earlier in the season. Second place there went to Oscar Freire from Team Rabobank. Third went to Gerald Ciolek from T-Mobile. Fourth, Danilo Napolitano from Team Lamprey. And in fifth place, Eric Zabel from Team Milram. Finally, the Eneco Tour held August 22nd through the 29th, and this year won by Jose Ivan Gutierrez from Casa de Parña in 26 hours, 5 minutes, and 44 seconds. Second place went to Great Britain's David Miller from Sonier Duval, 11 seconds behind. Third, Gustav Larsson from Sweden and Team Unibet, 1 minute and 5 seconds back. Fourth, Leif Hosta from Predictor Lotto, 1 minute and 12 seconds back. And in fifth place, Thomas Dekker from Team Rabobank, 1 minute and 15 seconds behind. He had been the leader the night before the final stage, but he had been a victim of a fall earlier, and according to him, quote, "mentally, I wasn't in it." So that brings us up to date so far with final results from the UCI Pro Tour. So sitting in the standings for the Pro Tour right now, in first place individually, Danilo De Luca from Italy with 232 points. Second place, Alberto Contador from Spain and Team Discovery, 191 points. And in third, Alejandro Valverde, also from Spain, with 190 points. In the team standings, Team CSC is at the top with 326 points. In second, Discovery Channel Pro Cycling, 292 points. And in third, with 289 points, Team Liquigas. As far as countries, in first place with 700 points, it's Italy. Spain is in second with 632, and Australia is in third with 415 points. Now, that does bring us current as of today, but right now, as we speak, we are in the middle of the final, the third and final Grand Tour for the year, the Vuelta a España, or the Tour of Spain. It began on September the 1st, and it runs all the way through September the 23rd. Sitting in first place right now after five stages from Spain and Team Rabobank, Oscar Freire. In second place, Daniela Benatti from Team Lamprey. In third, the world champion Paolo Bettini from Team Quickstep. In fourth, Philippe Gilbert from Belgium and Française de Joux. And in fifth place, Eric Zabel from Germany, and Team Milram. I will promise to keep you updated right here on the Fredcast as we continue through the 2007 Vuelta a España. One of the teams that's competing in this year's Vuelta a España is one which we are all familiar with because of their success over the last few years. That's the Discovery Channel Pro Cycling Team. But what is a bit sad about their appearance in the Tour of Spain and in the upcoming Tour of Missouri is that this is the last two times that we will hear the Discovery Channel Pro Cycling Team out there on the course, because as of a few weeks ago, the Discovery Channel Pro Cycling Team has announced that they will officially disband, having had difficulty finding a replacement sponsor for the Discovery Channel. Now, as we all know, one of the main parties in this team is Lance Armstrong. Sure, he's not riding, but he has been in team management. And according to Lance Armstrong, when he was asked about the disbanding of the team, he said, quote, "I do not think you've seen the last of this organization in the sport, but clearly things need to improve on many levels with a more unified front before you would see us venture back into cycling." Meanwhile, the question is, what about Alberto Contador? Because there was a lot of speculation and a lot of things swirling around the media that there is evidence to indicate that Alberto Contador might be implicated in the Operation Puerto scandal, especially after his victory in the Tour de France. The rumors were swirling even more than normal. As a result, Contador came out and made a special statement to the media just a couple of weeks ago. Just pulling a couple of quotes out of that statement, Contador said, "I've never committed a doping offense. I've never been involved in any act of doping. My promise against doping is absolute. I have passed all controls, surprise, and scheduled in my house and at competitions, during racing and when not, of blood and urine. I find it impossible to understand the personal attacks against me, putting in doubt my honor as a sportsman from people who don't know me. We have to make an effort to move forward in believing in cycling and in me." Meanwhile, of course, shortly after his statement, there was additional swirling rumors about additional evidence that might connect the Tour de France victor to the Operation Puerto scandal. Of course, there's going to be much more to come on this, I'm sure, in the days and weeks ahead. The next question, of course, is what about Discovery Channel's amazing director sportif, Johan Bruneel? Well, as of this week, there is additional news on that front when it comes to Bruneel. According to the International Herald Tribune, Johan Bruneel was offered a position with Team Astana this week, and Bruneel, in a telephone interview with the Herald Tribune, confirmed, quote, "They made me an offer," unquote. But he said that he's not ready to consider the offer right now because, quote, "Not right now. My head is full of a lot of things now, and I'm not thinking about the offer just yet. I'm in a relaxed mood. I don't really want to think about a new job." Apparently, the reports say that he was offered a job not as the director sportif, but as the team's head official. So this is a rumor which started a few days ago, which now seems to have been confirmed by the International Herald Tribune. We'll see whether or not Johan Bruneel does indeed go to Team Astana. But meanwhile, Astana's woes continue. Andrei Kazechkin was fired by Team Astana because he tested positive for banned substances and his B sample confirmed the positive test. As a result, after having been temporarily suspended, Kazechkin is now permanently dismissed, which is a nice way of saying that he was fired. And that, of course, comes on the heels of the firing of Alexander Vinokourov and his issues that occurred during the Tour de France. Meanwhile, Spaniard Jose Antonio Redondo has also been dismissed by Astana, and he was dismissed for, quote, "failing to abide by team rules." The quote went on to say the team does not want to issue a statement on the matter for the sake of the rider. But of course, everyone's assumption is that this has to have something to do with doping missing a doping control or something like that. I'm sure more details will come out. Well, meanwhile, the rumors were also circulating that there was a very good possibility that Astana was not going to continue as a sponsor of this team and that they were not going to reapply for a Pro Tour license. But the news now says that the Astana cycling team has applied for a new Pro Tour license, and that would be good until the year 2010. According to a statement from the team, quote, "So far, there's been no indication given to the executive board of the Astana cycling team that the team would not continue its activities." So something that we predicted with all of the troubles in this year's Tour de France was that teams were going to have a hard time getting or keeping sponsors. Discovery Channel Pro Cycling was a good example. The questions surrounding Astana are another. But now we also find out that Gerald Steiner has decided to leave professional cycling. According to a statement from Gerald Steiner, quote, "The recent doping incidents are not the reason for the decision. They did, however, contribute to the temporary devaluation of cycling as a communications platform." So, in other words, we're not going to say that it was doping, but we're going to tell you the doping didn't help. So that is really unfortunate and something which was certainly predicted on the Fredcast, on the Spokesman, in a lot of other places. And as you'll recall, when the team director of the team Rubicon sent us that email during the Tour de France, when all these things were going down, she told us, Noreen told us, that she felt that this is exactly what was going to happen. And sometimes you need to break something down before you can build it back up. And I think that's exactly what's going on in professional cycling right now. Now, when it comes to professional cycling, and especially when it comes to doping, probably the largest volume of email that I seem to be getting is questions from you asking me what the heck is taking so long in the Floyd Landis hearing. You'll recall that it was all the way back in May of this year that the hearing was held at Pepperdine University in California to determine whether or not Floyd Landis would be sanctioned by United States anti-doping authorities. So what has taken so long for a decision to be released? Well, ESPN.com is now reporting that they've got their hands on a memo, the memo written by the chairman of the panel that heard the Floyd Landis case, Patrice Brunet, a Montreal lawyer. In this memo, they said that they would be holding the last of their meetings with their own scientific expert on September the 12th. Now, this scientific expert was invited by the panel to attend every single moment of the hearings so that that expert would be a neutral party who would be able to help the panel members come to a decision and to interpret the scientific evidence. According to the memo, quote, "The panel remains acutely mindful of the timing issues in connection with this case. However, the panel also needs to verify an important volume of technical information, which is at the very core of this arbitration. Once the panel finishes meeting with their scientific expert, it's expected that they will then announce the official close of the hearing. Once they do, the clock starts ticking, because once they've closed the hearing, then they have 10 days within which to announce their decision. So considering the fact that they're going to be meeting with their scientific expert on September the 12th, the speculation is that hopefully by the end of September, we should finally hear the result of the Floyd Landis hearings. Keep in mind, however, that either side can then appeal the decision to the Court of Arbitration for Sport in Switzerland, and that is the last appeal that can be made. Once it's made to the Court of Arbitration for Sport, whatever decision they make is the final decision. I will keep you posted. Meanwhile, Floyd Landis is not just sitting around doing nothing. Besides going out and talking to people about his new book, he's also participating in cycling events, but not road cycling events. He's been participating in mountain bike events. Included in that was the Leadville 100, which is one of the country's most popular endurance mountain biking events. And this year, it was won, once again by Dave Weens. Dave Weens is a Mountain Bike Hall of Fame member, somebody that I remember back in the late 80s and early 90s as being a dominant pro on the mountain bike cross country circuit. This year, he won in 6 hours, 58 minutes, and 47 seconds, obliterating Mike Volk's 10-year-old course record of 7:05:45. And so once he crossed the finish line, people didn't understand why was it that Dave was able to achieve this amazing time. And they found out just a couple of minutes later when here came Floyd Landis to take second place in this year's Leadville 100. And then just recently, Floyd Landis participated in the Shenandoah Mountain 100, another endurance mountain bike event, 100-mile mountain bike event. And this race was won by Jeff Schalk. Second place went to Harlan Price. And guess who came in third? You guessed it, none other than Floyd Landis. 18 minutes, 44 seconds behind Schalk and a minute behind second place Price. So, you know, it looks like Floyd Landis certainly is staying in shape. I'm sure he's having fun out there doing these mountain bike events, but from some of the interviews that I've read and some of the comments that he's made out there on the book tour, there's no doubt that Floyd Landis would much rather be over in Europe racing in some of these major events. Specifically, he would have liked to have been defending his Tour de France championship title. And from doping allegations to the strongest anti-doping program in professional cycling, let's talk a little bit about Team Slipstream for 2008. First of all, Chipotle, the chain of Mexican restaurants, the ones that make those humongous burritos that you saw some of the guys holding on the podium during the first stage, actually during the prologue of the 2007 Amgen Tour of California. Chipotle has signed up for an even greater sponsorship role. They're now the presenting sponsor of the 2008 Slipstream Professional Cycling Team. Also announced was the roster for the 2008 Team Slipstream Chipotle, and this is an awesome group of cyclists, including names that you have heard many times, especially at the top of podiums, guys like David Miller, Christophe Laurent, Julian Dean, Dave Zabriskie, Christian Vandevelde, Magnus Backstedt, Tom Danielson, and American sensations Danny Pate, Jason Donald, and Tom Peterson, among others. This is a strong, and you can double underline strong, cycling team for the 2008 season. So far, Slipstream is planning on participating in the Tour of California, the Tour of Georgia, and also hoping to compete in Paris-Nice, the Criterium International, Philly Week, the Dauphiné Libéré, the U.S. Pro Criterium, the U.S. Pro Road Race, the Tour of Missouri, and they're hoping the Tour de France. With a team like this, with these kind of international credentials, the UCI would be crazy not to give them a Pro Tour license. And organizers like those who put on the Tour de France, if they don't have a Pro Tour license, would be crazy not to invite them as a wild card, as they did some other teams this year, like Team Barlow World, and you saw how well they did in the 2007 Tour de France. In addition, if you have any design skills, get your pen and pencils ready, because you will have the opportunity to submit your design for the 2008 Team Slipstream jersey. You have until September the 15th, and you can find all the details at slipstreamsports.com, and I put the link in the show notes. All you need to do is make sure that you incorporate an orange and blue Argyle, as well as the logos for Chipotle, Felt, and Slipstream Sports. Check it out. Enter. And if any Fredcast listeners win, please let us know. I'd love to put that jersey design on the website. Well, as happens sometimes here on the Fredcast, I've got a product recall to tell you about. And this is covering the 2007 Raleigh Cadent 1.0, Cadent 2.0, and Cadent Carbon bicycle models with carbon forks. These can be readily identified. Raleigh is printed on the down tube of the bicycle, and the model name is printed on the top tube. These were sold between January and June of 2007 for between $660 and $1,930 US dollars, and they were manufactured in China. The problem is that the carbon forks might break during normal use, and of course, that might cause you to lose control, fall, and suffer serious injury. Raleigh has received 3 reports of forks breaking, resulting in injuries, including a dislocated shoulder, a concussion, and a broken jaw. Consumers are told to stop using the recalled bicycles and return them to the place of purchase. Raleigh bike dealers will replace the forks at no charge. And for further information, you can go to the RaleighUSA.com website, or you can view the full recall details on the Consumer Product Safety Commission website. Links for both of those are in the show notes. In just a few weeks, it's going to be showtime. And when I say showtime, I mean the Interbike Trade Show, the industry's main trade show, non-consumer, here in North America. Now, we talked about this on the Spokesman Cycling Roundtable podcast. That's why we had Rich Kelly from Interbike on that show. But one of the things that we talked about, and we only talked about it briefly, was a deal that Interbike has just signed with Bikes Belong. Now, the Bikes Belong Coalition is the U.S. bike industry's organization that's dedicated to getting more people riding bikes more often. Bikes Belong is also a lobbying group, and they lobby to increase federal bike funding, and they also award grants to support innovative bike projects. They also promote bicycling and its benefits, and they back crucial national efforts such as Safe Routes to School, Bicycle-Friendly Communities, and the National Bike Summit. There were rumors over the last couple of years that Bikes Belong might get together with another organization to put on a competing trade show to Interbike. Interbike has now inked a deal with Bikes Belong to become a top financial contributor to Bikes Belong and a primary sponsor of 2 Bikes Belong projects, the Bikes Belong Foundation and also a high-profile bike project each year in Interbike's host city. Now, currently, that's in Las Vegas. Now, for its part, Bikes Belong will now officially endorse Interbike as the U.S. bike industry's trade show and will end its consideration of launching or supporting a competing event. Bikes Belong will also work closely with Interbike staff to maximize the appeal of the show and its related events to suppliers, retailers, and bike advocates. Okay, that's enough of the press release talk. Let's talk about what really happened here. Bikes Belong is a powerful organization. I saw that when I went to the Bike Summit in DC last spring. Bikes Belong gets a lot of money from American bike manufacturers to go out there and do the work of promoting cycling around the United States and making sure that money goes to important federal, state, and local programs to support cycling and things like Safe Routes to School. Nobody wants to see Bikes Belong get involved with a competing trade show. We've had competing trade shows in the bicycle industry before, and it was not a good thing. It was a flop, honestly. Interbike does a very good job at what they do, and bringing on a competing show, in my opinion, is only going to do one thing. It's going to cost us, the consumers, more money, because when manufacturers have to go to more than one major industry trade show, they have to pass those costs along to someone. And it may be their distributors, it may be their retailers, but eventually it's going to trickle down to you and me. So in the end, this is a good thing for consumers as well as a good thing for Bikes Belong, because Bikes Belong does excellent work on behalf of the industry and on behalf of promoting cycling around the United States. So in the end, I think that this is a good thing for everyone concerned. No matter where you live, whether it's in the United States, Europe, if you live down under, perhaps you live in South Africa, wherever you live, we all know that bicycle theft can be a problem. Well, the police in the city of Worcester in the UK have come up with a unique idea for making sure that you remember to lock your bike, something my friend Donna over at Kryptonite probably would agree with. What the police have decided to do is they've announced that if you leave your bike unlocked, they may remove your bike and you will have to call the police department and go to the police department to get your bike back. This is their way of making sure that you remember to lock your bike, and this is their way of making sure that your bike doesn't get stolen, because apparently in the city of Worcester, there are now 2 bikes stolen every day in the city center. And in the entirety of the UK, some 439,000 bikes were stolen last year. According to a spokesperson for the police in the city, quote, admittedly, to consider removing bikes before criminals do is very much a shock tactic. But we believe that if people do not start securing their property, it will quickly make many riders think longer and harder about how they safeguard their bikes. Now, at this point, it looks like this is just a proposal, but I'm sure that it's got a lot of people in the city of Worcester considering going out and buying a lock. And if that is what they do, then the police have achieved their goal, and that's another good thing. And with that, we can put a lock on this week's news on the Fredcast. So now I want to update you on something we've been talking about on the blog area of www.thefredcast.com, and that's the issue of Senator Fred Thompson, who has had an exploratory committee to determine whether or not he is interested in running for the presidency of the United States. Now, why do I bring this up on my show and why do I bring it up on the blog? Well, it's simple. On the website for a group called Friends of Fred, the website is imwithfred.com, there is a podcast, and the podcast they are calling the Fredcast. And so I have been writing to the folks who are involved with the potential Fred Thompson campaign, Senator Fred Thompson campaign, to encourage them to please stop using the name The Fredcast for a podcast. It is potentially confusing, and it is a brand that I have worked very hard to build, and one which, you know, while some of you may disagree with my wanting to defend the name, you need to understand that it is a name that has value. It is a name of a podcast, and so having another podcast out there would be potentially confusing. And you have to remember, while this is a labor of love for me, and I do love putting these shows together, it does take work. Some weeks I spend way more than I do at a full-time job working on this. And we have advertisers to protect, and there is a brand that needs protecting. So I am talking to those folks about getting them to consider to no longer use the Fredcast name. You should know as two updates for you. Number one, I have been contacted back by the campaign and by an attorney related to the campaign. And thankfully, a Fredcast listener who is an attorney is assisting me with that communication. And I will keep you posted as to how that goes. Now, I know that some of you have communicated with their campaign to let them know your feelings about their use of the term Fredcast, and the copies that you've sent me have been very respectful and have really honored the spirit of the Fredcast, this Fredcast, and I appreciate that. At this point, I don't think there's any reason for you to be communicating with them any further. Let's see how this goes in my communication directly with them. If you do, however, decide that you want to communicate with them, please do as your other Fredcast listeners have done. Only be respectful and classy, because that's the way that I think that we can get things done. Being mean-spirited, saying things that that maybe you might not say around your mom or around your kids, I don't think that that's warranted. Let's be only respectful, and if you want to let them know how you feel, that's just fine. But at this point, I don't think it's necessary, because we are now communicating with them, and I'll keep you posted and let you know how that goes. Now, on the other hand, this may be a bit of a scoop, but apparently this evening on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno, Fred Thompson has now announced that he is indeed running for the presidency of the United States. So no matter what your politics, it's always interesting to see another candidate throw their hat in the ring. So of course, we wish him luck and we hope that he does well. Of course, we also hope that they make the right decision about the name of their podcast. I'll keep you posted. Next up, I've got two requests for you. Requests about upcoming shows. As you well know, as we've talked about several times on the show today, the Interbike Trade Show is coming up. And if you listened to the shows that we did last year, I did a couple of shows from the Outdoor Demo where I went out and I rode bikes and I told you a little bit about them. And I also interviewed the people from the companies about those bikes. And then I went to the show and I talked to a variety of different people about a wide variety of different products and services. If you haven't listened to those shows, I encourage you to go back into the archives on iTunes and listen and get a feel for what we talk about when we go to a trade show. Here's my request for you. I would like to know from you what it is you would like to hear about when I go to cover this year's Interbike Trade Show. So shoot me an email, send me a voicemail or an audio comment. Let me know what it is that interests you, and I will try to cover those topics. Next week, or perhaps the following week, I'm planning on doing a review of the various online route planners that are out there. Now, we've talked about a couple of them. We've talked about Bikely. We've talked about Route Slip. We've talked about motion-based. But I'm interested to know from you, what are your favorite online route planners? And specifically, what is it about each of those that you like? I'd love to get your voicemail or audio comments that I can play on the show, because what I'd like to do is a brief summary and roundup of each of the various online route planners. So if there's one I haven't mentioned, please shoot me an email and let me know about it so I can check it out. And I'd love to be able to put your comments right into the show. Let's keep the show interactive. So feel free to send me an audio comment or a voicemail. I've added another way for you to do that. We'll talk about that at the end of the show. So over the next couple of days, as you're doing your thing, getting ready for a ride and using your favorite route planning software, please shoot me an email. Send me that audio comment. Let me know which one you use and why you use it. Now, last but not least tonight in our feature section, I'm finally happy to be presenting you with the second in our roundup of power meters. And I know that you have been waiting a long time for this, but for all the reasons I mentioned before, I have to apologize that I have not been able to bring you this review yet. Nevertheless, we are going a little bit long tonight. Hopefully you won't mind as I bring you my review of the new Polar CS600 cycle computer and power meter combination. Now, first off, I just want to let you know that all of the power meter reviews that I'm doing are going to follow the same format. So if you listened to the review for the iBike Pro many months ago, then you will be very familiar with the format with which I'm going to discuss the Polar CS600. So first of all, let's talk a little bit about how Polar works as compared to some of the other power meters on the market. Now, you'll recall with the iBike Pro, it used a combination of factors. Depending on whether or not it had cadence, it used the cadence sensor. It used the speed sensor on the front fork. It also used a wind sensor as well as a tilt sensor. By combining all of these together, it used a mathematical algorithm to determine how much power you were putting into your pedal stroke, and therefore you could monitor your power output as you rode. Polar does it a little bit differently. Well, actually, Polar does it quite a bit differently. Polar uses a cadence sensor. Polar uses a speed sensor. But then, because they say that all of the driving force or all of the power that you put into cycling, because it all eventually goes into the chain, they measure the forces that are acting on the chain. They measure chain tension by a power output sensor, which is mounted onto the bicycle, and they measure chain speed with a chain speed sensor. By putting this together with your cadence and with your speed, they're able to give you actual, average, and maximum power values. Then they're able to give you something that, which is unique, which I found extremely useful in balancing out my pedal stroke. They can give you left and right balance. Right there on the screen, you can see which of your legs is putting out more power than the other. And I found it very interesting, being a right-handed person, that my left leg was actually more dominant when I first started using the Polar cycling computer with power. And I found that over the weeks that I used it, I was able to balance out the power between my two legs, and I saw a definite difference in my cycling as a result. And of course, they're also able to give you the cadence. In addition, you get the typical readings that you get on a power meter: distance, speed, an odometer, all the regular readings that you're used to seeing on your cycle computer. Now, the CS600 is offered in two different versions, so don't get confused if you go out to buy one by the two different versions. There's the standard CS600, which includes cadence and speed and heart rate. But then there's the CS600 with power. The standard CS600 has a suggested retail price of about $420, and the suggested retail of the one with power has a suggested retail of about $710. So let's talk a little bit about how you set up and install the Polar. Now, one thing for me, and I know that my friends at iBike, they don't like to hear me say this, but the iBike's instruction manual left a little bit to be desired, in my opinion. Polar goes to the other extreme. They provide you with a lot of instruction and a lot of installation assistance. And of course, if you speak various languages, it's in all those languages as well. So I found that their manuals were really quite good. Now, having said that, I need to let you know that the installation and the setup of the Polar CS600 did take me just about an hour. And that may seem excessive to you if you've ever installed a cycle computer before, but the reason for that is that you have a lot of items that need to be installed, and some of them need to be installed quite carefully, and there's some things that you need to do that are going to take you some time. But again, the instructions were clear, and the install is easy if you're even moderately mechanically inclined. If you don't consider yourself fairly mechanically inclined, you could consider either having a buddy come over and help you or taking your bike and the unit to your local IBD, your independent bike dealer, and letting them do the install for you. So let's just go through quickly what it takes to install the CS600. There are several items that you've got to install on your bike. First of all, just like your regular cycling computer that just does speed and distance and time, you have to install the speed sensor on the front fork of the bike. The nice thing about the Polar speed sensor is, of course, that it is wireless. So you don't have to run a wire from the front fork up to the mount where you've put the computer. And that is the next thing that you're going to need to mount, and that is putting the computer onto your handlebar. Now, both of these are extremely straightforward to mount, much like any other bike computer. And if you only installed those two and put your heart rate monitor on, you would be ready to go out and go for a ride. But there are other items which you need to install, and these are the items which are unique. The first one is the power sensor main unit. Now, this mounts above the right chainstay on your bicycle, and this unit's going to look a little bit unique. It's not something that you've seen before because it alone is a little bit over 5 inches long, and when you add in the wires that need to come out of it, it turns out to be just over 6 inches long. So it's going to take up a fair distance on your right chainstay, because what this does is this helps measure the chain's tension and helps to measure the power output that you're putting into your bike. This is also the cadence sensor. So besides mounting this on your chainstay, of course, you need to put a magnet onto your right crank arm. Now, this was one area that I found that, quite honestly, Polar could have done a better job. The adhesive that comes on the magnet is fairly light, and then they give you a strip of tape to wrap around the magnet so that it won't fall off. In my opinion, Polar could do a better job with the adhesive and with the application of the magnet to the crank arm, but it's not enough of a problem for me to tell you that it's a big deal, because of course this is something you can fix yourself either with some super glue or with some better tape. So not a big deal, but something you need to know about if you look at the Polar CS600. The next component which needs to be mounted is the chain speed sensor. This one again is mounted in a unique location. To mount this, you have to remove the bolt that holds on the derailleur pulley, the bottommost derailleur pulley on your rear derailleur. Polar gives you the appropriate bolt to put in its place, whether it's for Shimano or Campagnolo, so that you can then mount the chain speed sensor right there on the outside of the rear derailleur. And then from there, you have to mount a battery case. This battery case is used to hold two AA batteries. You can imagine this is about 6 inches long, and it mounts onto the right seat stay of your bike. So just to recap, you've put a speed sensor on the front fork. You've mounted the cycle computer to the handlebars. You've put a chain tension and cadence sensor on your right chainstay. You've put a chain speed sensor on the bottommost derailleur pulley of your rear derailleur, and you've put a battery case on your right seat stay. So you can see why it takes just a little bit of time to mount everything up and get it installed onto your bike. So now it's time to set up your bicycle computer, your CS600 from Polar, and there are a couple of things that you need to teach your computer about. First of all, you need to tell it that your wheel size. Now that's common, very, very standard when you're setting up a bike computer. That's the first thing that you need to do. But the next thing that you need to do is you need to give the computer your chain's weight and length, as well as your chain stay length, because it uses these numbers in its calculation of your power output. And if you get these wrong, your power output calculation will also be wrong. So really the best way to do this, obviously you can measure your chain stay length, but in order to measure your chain's length as well as its weight, you need to remove it, clean it, and then measure it out as well as weigh it on a scale. If you don't have the skill to do that, this is where your independent bike dealer is going to be able to help you, because you need to have the proper tools and you need to have the proper know-how to know how to remove your chain to weigh it. Now, they give you some example weights in the manual, but again, if you're not 100% accurate on those numbers, then you won't be 100% accurate in your power readings either. But these initial settings that you put into your computer are critical, because even if later you remove links from your chain, it's okay, because the system uses the chain density, in other words, the weight and the length, in order to do its calculations. And removing links from the chain does not affect the density. Remember, density and weight are two different things. So get these first numbers right and your power numbers will be right as well. Now, once you've got all that information inputted, there is some additional information that you'll need to put into the computer. Simple stuff that you've seen before in other cycle computers, but it bears repeating. You give it the date, you give it the time, you let it know whether or not it should read in English or metric units. It's going to need to know your height, your weight, your birth date, whether you're male or female, and it's also going to want to know at some point your altitude where you're going to be starting your ride, because the Polar CS600 also gives you ascent and descent data as well, which I personally find very, very useful. I like to know at the end of 100 miles how many thousand feet I've climbed. I'm willing to bet that you would too. Now, before I move on, there is one other sensor, which of course needs to be mounted, but this doesn't get mounted to the bike. This one gets mounted to you. Polar is well known worldwide as a leader and innovator in heart rate monitor technology. So of course, that final sensor that needs to be mounted is the heart rate monitor. Standard heart rate monitor strap from Polar works flawlessly, just like you expect a Polar heart rate monitor to work. It is easy to use and easy to set up, and then you don't have to think about it anymore. You just put it on and it works. So let's look at what it's like to ride with the Polar CS600. First of all, you should know that the CS600 cycle computer itself has a really nice monochrome screen. The screen measures about 1.25 by 1.25, and it includes not just alphanumerics, but it also includes what I found to be some useful graphics. So as you scroll through and you go to the various functions, it not only tells you in words which function you're at, but it also gives you a handy graphic. And when you're riding and you're trying to scroll through things, sometimes it's easier to see those graphics than it is to see the words that are put on the screen next to the graphics. When you're ready to start your ride, you simply press the very large red start button. The Polar unit then checks to make sure that you've got your heart rate monitor on, that it's reading from the power sensor, and that it's calibrated your altitude. And that's something that you can set beforehand, whether you want it to auto-calibrate once you've set your initial altitude. And I have found that that works extremely well, although when I moved from Los Angeles to this high altitude here in Utah, I did need to enter the new altitude. But you know what? Not a big deal. Very, very easy to do. Once you're riding, there are a number of different screens that are available to you. A couple of speed screens, a couple of altitude screens, a graph screen, which is very interesting. It'll give you a graph of your heart rate and your altitude while you ride, which which is really geeky and very fun. And then, of course, there's also a zone view, so you can see what zone you're in and what percentage of the time you've been in each individual zone. Now, the information that's available on these various screens is customizable with the Polar software. So you can connect your Polar unit to your computer, and we'll talk about that in a minute, so that you can then customize which data is shown. For me, my favorite screens were the ones that showed the incline and the percent grade. So it showed the percent grade as well as the degree of the climb. I like the one that showed the graphs. And as I mentioned earlier, I really like the one that shows the percent power being put into my pedaling by my right leg and my left leg, so I could really balance out my pedal stroke. I found that to be extremely useful and something I hadn't had in any other cycle computer before. But for the most part, I tend to leave the one on the screen that shows my power and my speed and my cadence. And that's the one that tends to be on the screen the majority of the time. Because to change screens while you ride, there are four small buttons on the sides, the left and right side, two buttons each on the left side and on the right side, that you use to change screens. And I found that those were sort of small, that when you needed to reach those, if you were on a bumpy road, that got a little bit difficult. So I tended to only change my screens if I was on a climb or if I was stopped or going fairly slowly. Also, if you do want to change those data fields, which are on your screen, the only way that you can do it is with the software. You cannot do it while you're riding. So make sure that you decide when you're at home which data fields you want to see when you go out there on your ride. So let's talk briefly about the software that comes with the Polar unit. First of all, what you need to know, you Mac fans, is that Polar does not make Mac-compatible software. The software is only compatible with Windows. Having said that, I ran it under Bootcamp and I ran it under Parallels. It worked flawlessly, and the Polar software is perhaps some of the best looking and some of the most powerful software that I have seen that comes with a cycle computer or a GPS unit for that matter. There's no need to go out there and use Cycling Peaks or any other third-party software. The Polar software is really quite good and allows you to analyze your data very easily. And again, I said it before, it's very powerful. But if there is one drawback, it's that the only way that you can connect your Polar CS600 to your computer is via infrared. And Polar does not include an infrared reader in the box with the unit. You can buy one separately from Polar, but I recommend you do what I did, which was go down to my local discount computer store and buy a USB IR receiver. I plugged it into my computer. I think I paid maybe $15 for this thing. I plugged it into my computer, installed the drivers, and it worked flawlessly with the Polar software. So that was really good, but still a drawback. It seems to me if you're going to be spending over $700 for a cycle computer, that they could include the $15 USB infrared device. Again, for those of you on Macs, I know that some of your Macs include an infrared reader for the Mac remote. If you've got a new iMac or MacBook Pro, you're going to have that IR reader. Just know that that IR reader is solely for the Mac remote and will not work with any other infrared device. Now, one of the questions that comes up with any bicycle computer, especially a power meter, is whether or not you can mount the unit and use it for your off-season training when you're using a trainer. And the answer with the Polar is an absolute yes. Now, you'd want to put your speed sensor on your rear wheel, so you'd want to put it probably on your left seat stay and then mount the magnet onto the spoke on your rear wheel. But otherwise, there is no reason why you could not use this with a trainer in the off season, and I consider that to be a very big plus. Overall, I was very pleased with the Polar CS600. It was not too difficult to set up, not too difficult to install if you're patient and you take your time. And you don't have any qualms about removing the chain and weighing and measuring it. I found that using it out on the road, the big screen is a huge plus. It gives you a lot of data. Buttons were a little bit tough to manipulate while I was riding, but overall not a big deal. The heart rate monitor and the power meter worked flawlessly and very well. I suppose that If I had a couple of complaints, it would be one, no Mac software. Two, the hardware that you have to mount to your bike does take up a little space and it does tend to look, well, a little bit klutzy, if you will. And three, I really didn't like the way that the cadence sensor, the cadence magnet mounted to the crank arm, but I think that that's easily surmountable. And finally, my last complaint would be the lack of the IR receiver included in the box. Otherwise, a fantastic unit, very durable, very easy to use, very powerful, and provides you with a lot of extremely useful data. This is a product which I definitely recommend. It's different than the iBike. You'll recall that I did recommend the iBike to you. This is a more expensive unit, but I think that it gives you better software and that it gives you a lot more information. And this is a fabulous product. So check it out. I put a link in the show notes to Polar's website where you can get additional details as well as purchasing information. Now, if you have any questions about this review or any comments on it or any questions or comments in general or about the podcast or anything about cycling, here are the various ways that you can contact the Fredcast. Of course, you can send me an email. The email address is thefredcast@gmail.com. You can also send audio comments. We love audio comments because this keeps the show interactive. So I love to hear from you via audio. And if you do send me an audio comment, please let me know that I have your permission to play it on the show. Of course, you can send an audio comment via email if you know how to record one on your computer. It's not difficult to do. Or I have a couple of other ways that you can contact me and send me audio comments. Number one is a service called Odeo, and there's a link in the show notes to how you can do that, as well as on the main page of thefredcast.com. It's on the right-hand side. Scroll on down. It says send an audio comment. But there's two easier ways. First, you can use the Fredcast listener hotline. That's at area code 206-203-FRED. That's 206-203-3733. But I've also added Skype as well, so you can send a Skype voicemail. My Skype username is TheFredcast, or I have a Skype in number, and that's area code 435-258-6373 or 435-258-6FRED. And all of that contact information is on the website, which I encourage you to check frequently at www.thefredcast.com. And of course, if you want to know what I'm doing, when I'm working on the show, or when I'm out for a ride, you can follow me on Twitter. There's a link in the show notes, and there's also a link, again, at guess where? www.thefredcast.com. Well, I'm going to close this very long show this evening, as I always do, with PodSafe cycling music. And the music comes to us, as it always does, from the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. You may recall a few weeks ago, I played a Howard Jones tune, another name from the 80s, and today I'm playing yet another 80s/early 90s band that is appearing on the PodSafe Music Network. It's They Might Be Giants. Tonight's song is called Am I Awake? And I've got links in the show notes to where you can buy They Might Be Giants songs, where you can buy the Am I Awake tune, and also where you can find them on the Pod Show site as well as their own website. If you do like the song, I encourage you to buy it through iTunes, through the link in the show notes. It supports the Fredcast, and it also supports independent music that we can play here on podcasts for your enjoyment. So, I realize there's been a long hiatus. I appreciate your patience. I also appreciate the patience of my advertiser, Cambria Bicycle Outfitters. Please check them out through the links on my website at thefredcast.com. I will be back next week with another episode of the Fredcast. I've already got my product review ready for you. I'm getting ready to test my next power meter. I will have that for you quickly. So please stay tuned, stay subscribed. I thank you for your patience. Between this show and the next, I have a little piece of advice. Enjoy the music, but most of all, enjoy the ride.
Am I awake? What time is it? We'll be right back. tell me how, but how much longer now am I awake? The coffee's cold, did I forget to drink it yet? Get through this part. Will the next one be the same? Will I be wondering if I'm awake? These are not the clothes I had on when I went to bed, and something else besides my head is growing from my head. And when I close my eyes, it looks the same as when I. Is it that time again? Wasn't it already then? So does it have to be the time it was again? When I get through this day, can someone tell me how? And how much longer now am I through this day? Can someone tell me how, and how much longer now am I?